You're listening to 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. And we're here on the local showcase with the crew from Kansas City Zine Con. I'm Amos Leager.
My name is J.C. Sparks.
Hello, I'm Mark.
Hey, I'm Avi.
And we're all hanging out to talk about the fest that is coming up the day after tomorrow. I'm going to give you a little preview of what you can expect. And Avi is going to tell us about Silver Sprocket, his company in San Francisco. And we'll have some readings from local zines, perhaps some more music. We're going to roll with it and see where it takes us. We have over 100 artists, self-publishers, and zinesters who will be at this event tabling their wares. For those who may not be familiar, a zine is, simply put, a book that one publishes, creates themselves from the ground up, from the content to the printing and collating of it to the distribution. We call ourselves the Midwest's DIY Publishing Fest because we aim to celebrate people who take the publishing of their work and the dissemination of information that they feel is important into their own hands. And there's so much great work out there done by so many great people, and it has been for decades, that we have put together this event for the third year. This is the third year that we've done it, and we want to keep doing it.
Oh, yeah. No plan to stop. Perhaps our guest Avi would like to tell us a little bit about zines and perhaps a few other things.
I'm here for it. First, thank you for having me. I am tickled that you guys would bring me all the way out here from San Francisco to take part in the KC Zine Fest and, I mean, Zine Con, my apologies. And but yeah, this looks like it'll be really fun, so thanks again for bringing me out. Zines are awesome because anybody can make one. You don't have to get anyone's permission. You can just make whatever information you want to share and get it out there, and no matter how loud you normally are or what your voice is, and that's really special.
Yeah, that's a really good way of putting it. Zines arose in a time when the internet didn't exist, and sometimes the distribution of them was the only way certain like-minded people could share information with each other, free of the constraints of the publishing world. And when the internet became widespread, some people thought it was the end of zines and zine publishing, but we've seen a real resurgence of it in the past 10 years or so, right around the time that the internet has basically permeated the lives of almost everyone on the planet. And
kind of when the internet became a teenager and became all angsty, I don't know, around then.
Mom, I have feelings. You don't get me. This is for paper only. No, the internet definitely empowered a lot of people to get together and find communities that they didn't know existed elsewhere. And then zine culture was able to kind of be a deliberate medium with which to make messages and spread them around, where they were deliberate and took on tangible form and weren't just a Tumblr post to scroll off your screen, but leaving behind a tangible element worth keeping and having on your shelf or giving to a friend. So I think we're going to have zines for quite a while.
If anyone would like to field this question, what can a zine be about?
A zine can be about anything you want, anything that you have in your heart that you want to talk about, something you think will make you smile or laugh, or just your own private feelings. You get to make a zine at your own pace and share it with people who get to take it in at their own pace, and you're just kind of making a little time capsule documentation of whatever it is that you want to put out there.
Right on.
Avi, do you want to tell the listeners a little bit about Silver Sprocket and about what you'll be bringing to the fest, what you do in general?
Yeah, sure. So Silver Sprocket is a kind of I don't even really know how to best describe this. I mean, I guess you could say that we're a publishing company, but we're so much more of a flaming garbage wreck than that. We're just like a group of friends who are really into... We used to be a punk rock record label, which we'd been doing for coming up on 20 years now. And then as a crew, we kind of realized that bands were the absolute worst. And there's a lot of really interesting, important art happening in our like punk rock, anarcho, activist, queer, like whatever communities that we were really involved with. And we felt that these bands got a lot of energy and attention and got to play up on stage for a million people and or, well, tens of people and be the center of, like, you know, drunken party or whatever. And that's all well and good, but there were so many other forms of expression that were very important to these communities that did not really have this infrastructure of support and networking and camaraderie and channels of distribution and dissemination and things. So we kind of set out to be more of a what at the time we described as a punk rock art crew. And now I'm kind of embarrassed to say the word punk because, like, whoever knows what the heck you're talking about. We are a bunch of artists who make things and help each other out. Everyone owns all their own work. Like, there's no weird contracts where anyone's giving something up. We strive to provide a megaphone for, you know, marginalized. It's kind of, we're like a bunch of white dudes here talking about zines, but I think, you know, we publish a lot of, you know, queers and people of color, and, you know, we definitely should throw a parade for us for that. But now we're just having fun making the kind of garbage that we want to see exist in the world that we don't see other people doing a better job with. Yeah, so we're just kind of having fun publishing whatever feels neat and feels important and meaningful and we're hopefully doing a good job representing it and getting it out to people who might not have access to it otherwise.
And do you feel like coming to fests and events like this is beneficial to your larger project?
Absolutely. I would say, like, just tracking our mail order online or our website visits, you can see that it is directly tied to the places where we visit in real life and connect with real people. Like, the internet's obviously a big deal, and, like, it's fun when something goes viral on Twitter or whatever, but talking to real people in real life is really important and cool, and you get to actually see other perspectives in the world and things. And earlier on in our existence, we were kind of congregated in a couple super central locations, and now we have creators that we work with and publish and amplify scattered all over the world, including a lot of the people that we publish we met at events like this, where we would see each other tabling at different zine fests and kind of, you know, mutually admire each other's work and figure out, like, hey, wouldn't it be really cool if we collaborated on something? And, oh, I have a project and I think it'd be really good for what you guys are doing and what your audience is, or I bet our audience would freak out and love that.
I know one of the main things Silver Sprocket publishes is the comics anthology. Can you tell us about that, like how it started and some of the artists involved in that project?
Oh yeah, the As You Were anthology. That was kind of what empowered us to transition from being a record label to being a publisher, where a lot of the, like, there's a bunch of, like, punk rocker kids who are people who make art. Like, people who are into collecting records are into collecting comics and other stuff. Like, these are similar interest groups. And we'd always work with the coolest comic book artists to do art for our, like, posters or album covers or flyers or shirts or whatever. I was working with Mitch Clem, who was the artist for this old webcomic called Nothing Nice to Say. And we were doing all of his merch, kind of doing the same work for him as a comic artist that we would be doing for bands, of, like, organizing their merchandise and selling it and dealing with all the accounting and all that stuff. And he wanted to do this anthology comic of just punk rocker comic artist addressing a theme. So the first volume 5 years ago was called House Shows. So it was 18 of our favorite punk rocker comic artists doing short stories about just all of the shenanigans and adventure and love and loss and heartbreak and anarchy and chaos of having a punk rock show in your living room or basement or bedroom. And it was really, really well received. It was shockingly well received. Like, we got... NPR said nice things about us, and John Darnielle from the Mountain Goats twittered about how cool it was, and it was kind of really weird and neat. So we just kept on doing them. So now there's 5 volumes of it. The newest one is called This Job Sucks, which is all about crappy jobs. And we've had some, like, indie comic celebrities and famous people and, like, total, like, Tumblr new talent who've never been published anywhere, just doing phenomenal stories just from this, like, kind of for lack of a better term, punk rocker perspective, but I really don't want to use that word anymore. And I'm not sure what to do in the future. But that's also got us a toehold into like the world of comic publishing. And for us, like zines can be whatever you want them to be. Like it can be photos or words or like drawings or comics. And what makes it a zine is the empowering aspect of anybody can just go and do it, and it's like a DIY project. And so now, like, we've met a ton of amazing artists through these As You Were books, and then we started publishing a lot of their standalone work, and now we have, like, I don't know, like, 15 or 20 things that we publish a year, which is pretty wild from doing, like, one thing a year, like, 5 or 6 years ago. So, yeah, that was kind of our transition thing.
Very cool.
Thank you. Yeah, keep on rambling on and on and then forgetting what I'm talking about.
So you've got the comics and then also the stickers and some pins maybe and patches and that kind of stuff.
Yeah, we make all sorts of stuff. Like we try really hard to not make frivolous garbage, but you could absolutely call us the Hot Topic of Anarchy. That's fine. Like we try to do it with the ethics and sense of fun that we think should be there. Like one of our popular designs is, well, popular is what's popular, but like a 20-sided die crushing a police car.
I've totally seen that, by the way.
Yeah, and like people use our art for flyers and stuff, and we're totally into it. Like we want to like make the world more interesting in the ways we want. Like, okay, anarchist art, like, oh, that thing's a circle, let's put an A in it. Okay, cool. Like it's not that hard, but like we want to kind of have, like, we definitely take our politics very seriously. It's important. We care about it. But like it can be such a bummer sometimes. And it's pretty important to also have fun with things and have a sense of humor, you know, have a reason to get up in the morning, even though you're politically conscious and paying attention to things. So we make a bunch of other merch and stuff, too. Like some of the comics and zines do make money, but a lot of them barely scrape by. We can make a bunch of money selling t-shirts to continue funding things, and we're pretty upfront about that. There's events that we will pay for all of our expenses with, like, a t-shirt design, and then that enables us to, like, distribute Learning Good Consent or, like, whatever other stuff we're doing, and it all goes together. Like, all the art we do is directly relevant to books we publish. It's not like, you know, here's a pizza that's a shark. It's nothing to do with anything, which would be a totally rad zine, and I'm not hating on that, but ours kind of sticks to a central set of themes and values.
Sure. And that's a good way of putting how the motivation behind zine making and even DIY merch and apparel making is often not profit.
It's amazing that a lot of us can do this and kind of cover a lot of our costs. And that's a very recent development. I don't have a crappy day job at this moment, and I'm very excited and grateful for that.
That makes you a huge success story, yeah.
Life goals.
Uh-huh.
Yep.
But we do have that approach to, like, whatever we make of, like, the DIY empowered. Like, what's the thing that we want to see exist in the world that no one else is making? And it's amazing that with the internet and zine culture and these networks of communication, you can make a thing that's meaningful for your peers that you care about without having to be a total sellout about it.
Yeah.
And that's how a lot of zines get started. Just people wanting to get together and I have this idea, you have this idea, we're on the same wavelength here. Let's make a zine about this. Let's make a little book or something.
On that note, why don't we have a short segment of readings from some of the zines we've brought into the studio today? JC, looks like you've got a couple things. Would you like to regale us?
I do have a couple things in front of me. I actually brought the first zine I ever did, and I like to every once in a while say what motivated me to make this zine. And what it actually was I saw this zine of a frenemy, if you will. And I saw the zine, and I said to myself, I can make something better than that crummy old zine. Give me a break. And so I set to work getting together some poets who I had met and who I was writing with and having a lot of fun hanging out with. And I said, let's make a zine. And that's kind of how it came together. And then we had the first issue of Colossal in, I'll say, February 2013. And I'd be happy to read some very dark, surrealist poetry that's kind of short, so You Will Survive by Whitney Freeman. who is a very cool poet out of Boise, Idaho. That's where I was living at the time. It's not local here, but everyone's a local poet where they're from, if that makes sense. And I guess I'm local, and I published the poem, so... Or I produced it. I produced the zine. I don't know. It's all zine terminology is weird. Anyway, I'll start our little zine reading here by this poem called Rebirth of A... ... by Whitney Freeman. Curled, closed, exposed from the body, you began like a burnt fetus. You were clawed out by plastic hands. You kept your position. Hands to head. Keep them loaded in your skull. Out you came, still grasped at that placenta. Hands melted around its casing. You never wanted to evacuate. But wishes are not to be ignored. You cannot make home in there forever. Into the world, into doctor's hands, away from mother's crying arms, your body retired red. So that's that one. I really like her stuff. It's super crazy, kind of scary. And I'll do another quick one. I've got a couple nice quippy quick ones in this zine that I can read fast, and that's another nice thing about zines. You can make nice short little pieces or long ones. Anyway, this is going to be Wool Series number 3 by James Finkbeiner. I go for a late night drive in a friend's car. He puts on music over the stereo. The tape deck is filled with wool. The drive above the canyon, we drive above the canyon and the wool begins to spool out into the car. It begins to obscure the windshield and suddenly we can't see the road. We speed into the blindness. The car must be careening off the cliff. We must be falling to our deaths. I can't see anything. I can feel my own ghost awaken. I can feel him stretch atrophied limbs in my stomach and begin to knit. And that's that one. And then I'd be happy to read something kind of short from one of my own poetry zines. I do ones, these days I do ones that are mostly me. Colossal had a nice little run of 3 volumes, which is kind of long for the average zine. This is a poem that I wrote about creating things, basically, and why we create, and how it feels to think about, hopefully, what we leave behind will still exist someday. And this is called You Will Be Remembered As. Imagine you were a pile of rattling bones mechanically rolled into a paper cylinder amongst bits of tobacco, your skull resting next to your hip, buried in the processed materials. Imagine being remembered as the nameless, unseen contents of a casing. We all have dreams, don't we? Poems, the art, the music, the creations are all alive. We, the creators, are the ones doomed to die. I like to imagine ribbons of my thoughts stretching across county lines, winding through concrete passageways in all the American cities. Imagine what a human sacrifice smells like. Bones burned away as the casing containing them chars and disintegrates. This is how we're all to be remembered. Sacrifices fired carelessly into the fabric of landscapes. And that's all. And you are listening to 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio, here with ZineCon.
Great. Thanks, JC. I brought a very old zine of mine, Infoduct, which was published in the years between 2011 and 2014, I believe. And being that KC ZineCon in some ways helps herald in the end of summer, being the last weekend of August, and that autumn follows summer, I brought in this old issue with a piece I wrote about Halloween decorations. So this was from October of 2012. I live on the edge of the Valentine neighborhood, which could be given rough borders of Southwest Trafficway West, 31st Street North, 39th South, and Broadway East. This neighborhood rates about a 3 out of 10 on the scale of quality Halloween decoration, 10 high. In general, one will find less decoration in neighborhoods with fewer families and children. The reasons why are understandable and disappointing. But in this and any city, and especially in a neighborhood like Valentine, replete with vacant lots, density of decoration is not the most important factor. Rather, it's about strategic placement. An entire house can achieve the perfect degree of hauntedness with nothing more than a severed limb sitting on a table in view of the street. Leave a tungsten light on at night to orange up the tableau. That's only an example. Pumpkins on the porch, if not carved, are barely trying. A single skull buried up to its nose in your lawn is perfect. Flashing lights in a window at night are especially unnerving for some reason. When walking around and through the huge grassy patches just off the traffic way, I half expect to turn and see a desiccated corpse leaning out from behind a tree at me. Way in the distance, but we lock eyes. This needs to be a full expectation. The entire city was built on a graveyard, and if we don't let those mossy headstones grow up from the ground, we're kidding ourselves. Plant a spooky object somewhere that a lone dog walker at night will pass. They'll jump. Put on a mask and walk around in the early afternoon on a gray day. You may not be seen by a lot of people, but the ones who do see will know that this time, the monster came for them. This is the best time of year for fiends to rise early. The sun's wattage is dimming and doesn't hurt them. Hidden and hooded faces are watching you. Will you run, or will you pull on your cloak and watch back? That's all I got. We are about halfway through our hour, and it's been a distinct pleasure to share it with you all. And Avi, thanks so much for coming and telling us about what you do.
Thank you for having me.
You covered just about every point we could hope to as far as the world of zines. So that's great.
Talk about the other feature tablers?
Yeah. So in addition to Avi being here as our featured tabler from San Francisco, we have a slate of local featured tablers, including Imagine That KC, MG Salazar, and Andy and Graham of the Blue River Society.
And they will each have their own time slot. Not Imagine That, but the Blue River Society people, Avi will be part of a panel, and MG Salazar will have their own little time period in the program room at ZineCon, presenting different things. You can go in there. I think MG Salazar is called Art and Activism. Graham and Andy will be talking about the Blue River Society, and Avi will be part of a panel discussing zine distros, along with Pioneers Press and Neither Nor Zine Distro.
Yeah, so on the day of the fest, though there will be innumerable artists to meet and zines to look at, we also have programs in an auxiliary room at the event location. So it's nice to go in and sit down and hear someone talk for a while. A good way to break up the fest day. Let's see, what else do we need to cover?
You can find our sponsors on our website. We strongly recommend checking out our Facebook if you are so inclined and sound interested in zines.
And our website is kczinecon.org. kczinecon.org.
I had a little idea. We could, if we wanted, have a little kind of Xenoholics Anonymous moment here and talk about how each of us got involved in zines.
I like it.
All right, so when did you first discover that it was pronounced zine and not zine?
I think I maybe heard the word before I saw it, so that might have been Like, I heard zine, and I saw it, and I was like, oh, that's how it's spelled? Weird.
I think I was lucky enough to have heard it many times when I was in high school in Portland and going to the IPRC every now and then, and I was no doubt such a shy teenager that I never would have occurred to me to speak up before I heard somebody else say it.
Well, I, as a member of Zion Nation, will say that when I was living in Boise, Idaho, I'm from here, but I went and lived there for 5 years when I was going to school. This was when I started getting into zines, and I was kind of like, I don't know if you've heard of, what's that disorder where you try to oppositional defiance, or I don't know, maybe it's real, but I knew how to say zine, but I was very much so trying to get other people to say zine. I was very proactive. In fact, the second volume of Colossal Poetry Zine, Colossal Collaborative Poetry Zine, zine is actually spelled Z-Y-N-E on the cover. So that was my relationship to zine and zine. And I was like kind of serious about it too, a little 22-year-old me. But now I'm more chill.
I think a couple years back I was trying to get everyone to say mag instead, to go the beginning of the word instead.
Well, I could talk about when I first started zines was in 2004. I used to see zines more in the context of music around the late 90s, like at record stores, and they were always music-based. And then around the early 2000s, there was a person in Kansas City making a zine called Behind the Stove, and they would leave it at coffee shops, and it was like weird comics and compilation stuff. And I met them and became friends with them and realized, wow, this is really easy. I can do this. Just make a zine. So in 2004, it was after Bush stole the second election, I decided I'm going to start making my own zine. And mine was kind of my attempt was to be like a cross between the Principia Discordia and Anarchist Cookbook and Highlights Children magazine. So I made about 11 issues of that and kind of retired it, and it was called Operations Manual.
R.I.P.
Many sad fallen zines out there, but all good things end eventually, I suppose.
And Avi, can you tell us maybe about your early zine experiences?
Oh gosh. So when I was in junior high school, and I made my own little newsletter, not really knowing what zines were, and I got suspended for it because it included tips about like blowing stuff up and talking crap about teachers, and it was stupid, but it was really funny. My hippie uncle used to like tour with the Grateful Dead and stuff like that, so he always he subscribed to like Fact Sheet 5, which was this old print catalog of zines. I don't really know when that was for. I think it was like 70s and 80s, but I'm not sure. But it was like just this catalog that was like a directory of all the zines that got published in whatever period of time, kind of like the back of Maximum Rock and Roll record, of the Maximum Rock and Roll magazine being like, these are all the punk rock records that came out this month because we're reviewing them all. And it would have like a paragraph about each one and where to send money to get them. And so I was familiar with the concept of like really crappy handmade pamphlets that anyone could make. Like, that didn't seem like a difficult thing for me. My parents had a home office with a copy machine, so I was constantly making my own little comics and garbage and whatever. You know, I went to college for journalism, and I was always into self-publishing and telling stories or getting information distributed. I was really into just the concept of direct action, and you could write a letter to the paper and hope they publish it and don't edit it the wrong way, or you can make your own flyer about whatever's on your mind and just put it up around town. And I was that snotty little, like, full of myself kid who just wanted to just go out there and do it. So I think I just kind of grew up with it for some reason that I cannot really explain.
We don't always need a reason. Or the reason is simply because it's not there yet.
But I think, like, kids make zines all the time without even knowing it. Of, like, we're making our little newspaper for our, like, imaginary world or whatever. Or, like, here's a comic I'm making. And that's really cool, just creativity and doing it.
Yeah.
True. Raised on zines. Pretty cool. And I like the idea that maybe now that the resurgence of zines is happening, the younger generation growing up right now, you know, they in their city, they can go to an all-ages event that is no cost and see and have access to zines, which I think is really cool.
It's really exciting. Like the New Orleans NoCaz, New Orleans Comics and Zine Fest. Maybe the fest F is silent, but they have like a ton of kids from the local high schools and junior highs who come out and make stuff right alongside all these like grown up adult zinesters who've been living it for years. And it's so cool watching like these kids who just get so excited, like, whoa, I could make something too. Like this thing that this person made, like I can do that. And I think the empowerment of like anyone can do it. Like you don't, there's no gatekeeper. It's just like one of the most important parts to like DIY culture and all that. So yeah, I'm really excited to see what everyone out here is making and has to show off and do, because every single event I've been to in different parts of the country will have different aesthetics and vibes and values and different spikes of what kind of content is really prevalent or not prevalent and perspectives. And because there's no gatekeepers. It's just the raw communication of whatever someone is making.
Yep, no editors, no masters.
That's right. And we will all be able to see what everyone has to offer on Saturday, August 26th, from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. at El Torreon, 3101 Gillum Plaza. KC ZineCon 3 is open to the public, an all-ages event, and it's a safer space.
I'll be there.
I'll be there.
Mark will be there, maybe.
I'll be late, but I'll be there.
Yeah.
We'll all be there. That about brings us to the close of our hour, I believe. And if you'd like to get in touch with us via email, that address is kczinecon@gmail.com. And our website, again, is kczinecon.org. That about does it, I think. Thanks so much for listening.
Thanks, KC. Thanks for having us on 90.1 KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio, ZineCon.